But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Start producing.
How's it going, Tom? Here we are, halfway through the month of April already.
I know. It's crazy. Taxes are done, and you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Are you on a payment program now? Or
I do. The IRS has a special payment plan for me.
Yeah. They're not my favorite people, I got to tell you, you know. But, you know, you wouldn't mind if they were doing something decent with the money, but they somehow seem to lose it all. Anyway, I got to tell you, I went to a place the other night called the Other Side Wine Bar in Glen Cove. Have you been there?
No.
Pretty cool little place. I mean, it's like an old home, I think. You know, like those old Victorian houses in on the North Shore there? They seem to have taken one of those and made like an interesting little wine bar. The place is really cool. It's got, you know, the whole beam kind of like early American Victorian looking thing. And a very, very interesting wine list. I got to tell you, I had a really cool wine from Jura, from the eastern side of France. And there's a red called, Trousseau, T-R-O-U-S-S-E-A-U or something like that. But it's a grape I've been a big fan of for a long time, and you don't see them very often because a lot of people don't carry wines from Jura. They're not as popular as, you know, the rest of the world. So great, great stuff. And then they have this interesting little tasting menu. You know, they have a couple of entrees, maybe three, a burger, and then they have a whole bunch of apps and little small plates to share. So if you're ever in that neighborhood, it's over on Glen Street.
So deep into Glen Cove.
Yeah. It's kind of on the outskirts of the village itself, but a really cool little place. And I think they're attached to some kind of a coffee shop or something. You know, they have a dual operation going. And a lot of fun, man. We had a good time there. It was, I was probably there for about 2 hours or whatever. And the place was, you know, fairly busy. It was early on a Tuesday night. You know, we went there. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember. But yeah, it was really cool. If you get in that neighborhood, check it out.
What type of crowd did they have on a Tuesday? Or
thin, a thin type of crowd. There weren't a lot of people there. You know, weekdays on Long Island is an adventure. You know, when you're in the restaurant business, you're trying to get people in. But it was kind of really, really fun place, and I was surprised how cool it was on the inside, because from the outside it just looks like a little white clapboard house. You know, but once you get in there, it's they have an interesting little sort of like a wine cellar right behind the bar, open kitchen, really cool. They did a really nice job on the inside. So get yourself over there, Stu, and have a bottle of something.
All good. So this time of year, what excites you in the vegetable and foods? And
well, right now I've been playing with a lot of asparagus, morel mushrooms, get me crazy. What else? We got English peas around now. And ramps. Are you familiar with ramps?
No.
Ramp is like a wild onion. It looks like a scallion with a dress on. You know, it's like this, got this wide leaf. But they're basically wild onions, and they have this incredible onion-like flavor that's not really bitter or anything. It's kind of sweeter, you know. So we do a lot with those. They do them grilled. We make a ramp butter. I've been serving with a halibut lately. Those are the kinds of things that I think come around this time of year. Lamb actually is, in season. You look at Greek Easter, and they're all roasting lambs on spits. And, you know, we're doing a lot of lamb racks and things like that, legs. So, those are basically the spring items. Rhubarb is around now, you know. So I was doing, last week I did a goat cheese and ginger cheesecake with like a rhubarb jam, you know, which was kind of fun. So those are the things that, you know, and we're slowly transitioning into, you know, I'm starting to see soft shells. You know, I had them, they were up, generally they run around $60 to $75 a dozen. Right now they're up in the 120s, you know, they're about $10 a piece. So they're kind of expensive, but they're exciting to have, you know, first of the season soft shell crabs that come around. They haven't been around since, probably disappear sometime around October.
So you mentioned rhubarb jam. Is that a sweet jam? Or?
Yeah. You need a lot of sugar. Rhubarb is one of the most sour things you could probably put in your mouth. I mean, you know, it's amazing how much sugar you need to tame it. You know, it's really, really sour.
So not to get deep into the recipe, but is most people would go to the store and get rhubarb jam if they found it on the shelf. What's the basic, how do you prepare something like that in your kitchen?
Basically, all I do is I cut the rhubarb up, and then I'll just steam it down with a little bit of sugar, Well, a lot of sugar, actually. And then at the end, I'll add a little gelatin to it just to kind of firm it up a little. You don't want it like Jell-O. You don't want it hard like that, but it needs a little body. But you can't, don't put much water in it because the rhubarb throws a lot of water out. So if you had like, let's say, I don't know, 2 cups of rhubarb, you probably need at least a half a cup, if not a little more sugar, because it's really, really sour. And then I add a little salt, you know, just to, because I salt all my desserts, so I think it's important.
So you said the two magic things, because we have a guest today.
Yes.
So rhubarb being sweet and, you know, desserts or whatever. We have with us today Antonio Cuccia from Alpine Pastry Shop over in Smithtown.
Oh, that's on 111, right? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, that's on 111.
Nice.
So if you surf social media, Antonio's all over social media at the moment because the current craze is...
The rainbow cookie donut. Oh, man, the rainbow cookie donut.
Yeah. It's funny how we were talking off mic before how one item can define you, and you know, it's sometimes it's accidental, you know what I mean? You come up with an idea, you don't think it's going to work, and bang, you know, there it goes. You know?
I'm led to believe this is one of many, but right now it's the rainbow cookie donut. How did that come about? And then we'll get into the history of your pastry shop.
Well, it's something that we've been playing with. We always are trying different things, especially with the rainbow cookie, because people just love when you throw it in everything. So,
yeah,
I mean, we have the cookie. We made, the cake, like the giant size rainbow cookie. And then we made like a pastry, and then, you know, now it's in cheesecake, it's in cupcakes, it's in like
get out of here,
baked
this
into
rainbow
vanilla
cookie
cake.
Cheesecake.
Oh yeah, it's
chicken
delicious.
Parmesan.
Yeah, it's in everything. So we're always playing around with it, and you know, we were just saying like, what's another way, like fun way that we could get it to people? So you know, we came up with this donut form of it, and you know, now it's blowing up, and you know, of course, like we can't be the only ones with the idea. Some people tell me, "Oh, so and so did this, you know, a year ago or whatever."
Oh, please.
But
yeah, so what?
But you know what? It's something that we came up with. We did it our own way.
Yeah,
I'm not copying anyone, and obviously, people love it. So,
so let's get into this. So,
one second before, let me just interject here. You know, this whole thing comes to copyright.
You're the boss. Whatever you want to do.
That's right. I'm the boss. Damn it! Shut up. I'm going to say something. So anyway. I've been listening to this argument for years about copywriting food because people are always stealing each other's ideas. And it's such bold, you know what, because the bottom line is, it's like, you know, who's the first guy that invented a hamburger? Now, you're not allowed to make a hamburger because he had one. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, right?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, you say, you know, you go out, you get inspired, you put your own twist on it, and who's the worst for the wear?
But again, now you just brought up that ongoing conversation we have. A hamburger's invented. Who decided you put ketchup on it? Why not mustard? Why not something else? The hot dog, why it got invented? Why mustard on it? So you just opened a Pandora's box again.
Those are the questions for the ages, Stu. Let's get back to the bakery.
So I'm just so curious about how you make a rainbow cookie donut. I mean, so my understanding is when you make rainbow cookies, it's made on a sheet, the different layers, and I guess the jelly or, I mean, you can get deeper into it, but so you have a sheet of the rainbow cookies, and are you just cutting out like discs?
No. So I know that that's how a lot of places are doing it now, because you know, ever since we started going viral with it, now everyone has them.
Sure.
So I know a lot of places are doing that, but there's a ton of waste in that. So we actually will bag out each circle, each disc, and. It's not fried because that gets like that really oily taste. It's not the right kind of dough to fry.
Sure,
But and then we put them all together. We stack them all together individually, and it's a process. It is absolutely.
It takes
a whole team of people all day.
I can imagine. You know, one day, you know, your wife or your girlfriend or whatever. You know, I'm not coming home right now. I'm experimenting with this new concept that I have.
Yeah, so I actually, when it first started, I made like 6 of them, and I made them different ways. I put the colors in different orders. I put different fillings inside. I made ones with all apricot, ones with all raspberry, ones with both. And we, you know, my dad was like, get them in the store. Let's sell them. And I'm like, no, it's not ready yet.
Yeah,
I have to try them. I have to figure out what's the one that I want to make, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And we landed on the way that it is now with the both the raspberry and the apricot because traditionally we always make our rainbow cookies with only apricot, which, you know, some people are very against that. They sure, feel like yeah, a rainbow yeah. has to have raspberry. But yeah. from what I understand, that's actually more like the old school way of doing it. It's
oh, yeah?
just apricot.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that, at least from what I understand. But I feel like this is the best way to do it. And I mean, people have been loving it. So
let's go back. So a rainbow cookie, what's actually the recipe for something like that? I something comes to mind, marzipan.
Yeah, well, I can't tell you the whole recipe.
Yeah,
but
he's trying
it's
to get
got,
it out of here. You know, right, I mean, my secret formula.
it's mainly almond paste. That's like the main flavor behind everything, and that's really like the magic. I know a lot of places, you know, things are expensive. I mean,
almond paste
a pail
is up
of
there.
Almond paste yeah. is very expensive. So a lot of places will just cut it with, you know, a ton of almond flavor or
sure,
just
yeah,
only
yeah.
almond flavor.
Yeah.
And you won't get the right kind of texture. It won't yeah. have the feel or even the right kind of taste.
Sure.
So, you know, you can't cut corners.
Is there
like
a
that.
Protocol of what color comes first on from bottom to top or top to bottom?
Well, when I make rainbow cookies, it's always white, red, green, white. And we do four layers of cookie.
Is that represent a flag or something? Is there some
Well,
kind of...
some people call it the flag cookie, but that, I mean, doesn't technically like make sense for the way that we do it
right,
because
right.
that's not the flag.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
actually the rainbow donut does look like the Italian flag is that it's got the red, white, and green.
Right,
so,
right. That's what I thought.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So we got the order of the almond paste. And then, again, you seem to be a big advocate of the apricot jam. Is that on top or is that on the bottom? You know, because you're saying that you have both raspberry and apricot. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, when we fill them, it's always we do the red and then the raspberry, the white, and then the apricot, and then the green.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the way that we do it. And for me, I feel like it looks, you know, more aesthetic.
You know, in the pizza world at one point, they started making upside down pizza, right? Because normally you put the sauce on the crust and then the cheese. Then they were putting the cheese and the sauce on top. So, I mean, I don't know if this is going to morph into multiple versions. You know, you have your rainbow cookie donut version one, version two. The 250th anniversary of America version is going to be red, white, and blue.
Well, this is why, you know, he made six or seven to begin with, you know what I mean? You want to get that thing right before you put it out there, you know?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if he has kids and, you know, today's apparently bring your kid to work day, but, you know, he comes home with all these different creations.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully my kids want to go into the business. I mean, all of my siblings and my cousins and everyone involved in the family, they all came in to work, like, you know, when they were kids.
Sure.
But so far, I'm the only one who came back to work, yeah.
You know, it's funny. I go away a couple of times a year with my college roommates, right? We all went to chef school together, mm-hmm. right? And I'm the only idiot that's still in it. Everybody else got real jobs, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so we're
yeah.
kind of like kinship that way, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely a real job. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not in the restaurant business per se, but it is a ton of work.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not just playing around.
No kidding. That's why most of these places fail. You know, restaurants for sure, but I'm sure bakeries too, because people don't think it's easy or whatever. Yeah, I'll go in, I'll make a couple of cookies. It's a lot harder than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my dad tells me all the time about how there used to be a bakery like on every corner, like
yeah.
big bakery, you know, very popular. And over the years, they all just started to go under. Even in the last year, we lost a couple of bakeries, like pretty big names like in the area.
Sure.
So, you know, we've been there since 1981 and it's still
that's
kicking.
Great.
So that's a great segue into the history of Alpine Pastry Shop. You mentioned your dad. So how did the bake shop start and when did you get involved? And
Yeah, so I'll try to, like, give you the spark notes of the whole...
The Reader's Digest version.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, my grandfather came here from Sicily when he was pretty young, probably like 12 or 14, somewhere around there.
Uh-huh.
And he started working in a bakery. He was the porter, you know, he washing the pans, washing
sure.
the floor, you know, just cleaning and everything. And he was there for a little while doing that. And this is how the story is told to me, is that the main baker, he got sick, something happened, and he was out. And my grandfather was like, I can do that. I can bake it. I can do exactly what he did. Sure. And the owner didn't even believe him. And sure enough, my grandfather just was doing what the baker was doing. Exactly how he was doing it.
Well, observation.
And he paid attention to everything. He learned all the recipes. He learned all of the, you know, exactly how, all the techniques and everything without even really, you know, practicing it.
It's osmosis at that point.
Yeah, well, it's really unbelievable. And, you know, he did that for a little while, and then the baker came back, and they said, you know, you're great, but I can't have two bakers. So he went and actually opened up his own place for a while, and he had a place, Villa Cucci, which was, you know, in Brooklyn for a couple of years. He ended up at another bakery, Ridgie's, where he was like the main baker there. Uh-huh. And that's where a lot of people followed him from. You know, at some point, my dad was in high school and he was saying, come on, let's open up our own place. Our own place. And so they finally did it. They bought Alpine, which was a German bakery.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what the name came
from. Yeah, so the name is, it was a German bakery. Yeah. We didn't change the name because they were afraid of losing customers. They wanted to have, you know, all those same people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they just jumped into it. My dad was, like, still in high school. My uncle, my aunt, like, the whole family was involved.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people knew my grandfather from Ridgie's, and they noticed that, you know, stuff might not be the same, and they were questioning. And then surely enough, they all started following. And I still get people today who will tell me, oh, yeah, your grandfather, I mean, he passed a little over a year ago.
Uh-huh.
They say, you know, we've been coming here. We've been following your grandfather ever since Ridgie's or Alba's or whatever. Like,
how cool is that?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really nice. You know, these are like, you know, the older crowd.
Sure.
A lot of old school guys. But they tell me, you know, nobody else makes it this way. You know, and it's still the same, even, you know, with him not here anymore. You guys are still doing the same. So, yeah, I think my grandpa would be proud.
You know,
we're trying to keep it up.
I love the story only because, you know, I've been working with immigrants my whole life. I'm in the kitchen, you know, for the last 57 years, right? And you see these kids, and just like your granddad, I had this guy, Marbian, who worked for me for a while as a dishwasher. And he looked at me one day, he goes, you know, I think I can do the pantry. I'm like, really? Yeah, okay. So I gave him a shot. Sure enough, he did it. You know, a year later, I think I could do the grill work there. Really? Yeah, and he did it. You know, I think I could do the – anyway, he's running a $5 million catering operation now. Kid I had when he was 15 years old, just the same like your grandfather. They just, you know, there's this ambition and drive and things that, you know, people come over here, immigrants come over here, and they realize the American dream. It's really out there, you know, and your grandfather's a prime example.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that's kind of funny is that, you know, no one who works at the shop went to culinary school.
Yeah.
Nobody went to get schooling to do baking. And, you know, they, like, everyone started as porters, basically. You know, just washing, whatever. And then, you know, you slowly bring them in. You say, all right, you're going to teach you this. We're going to teach you that. You know, you get the people who are hard workers.
Yeah.
And those are the people that, you know, they show up every day and they do the work. Like, that's what makes the magic happen. So,
yeah. You know, I had, you know, I started as a dishwasher. I lied my way into a dishwasher's job because I had to buy a new amplifier that I blew up trying to do a Jimi Hendrix tune. But anyway, that aside, you know, I went to culinary school afterwards and I learned a lot of other skills. I learned how to drink Heineken without throwing up, you know, and all the other stuff that you do in college. But the bottom line is, you know, now, I mean, when I went to CIA, it was $2,500 a year. Now it's like $50,000. And so when kids come to me, I go, you know, if your parents have that kind of money and you want to go and have the college experience, go ahead. You know, it's fine. But, you know, if not, stay with me for a year. I'll send you to Stu for a year, and Stu will send you to, you know, to his friend for a year, and you'll have 3 years worth of, you know, not only education targeted to what you want to do, but you'll also have, you know, maybe 25 grand in the bank instead of owing 80, you know what I mean? Which is a $110 swing or whatever it comes out to, you know? So I think that working your way up is totally legitimate. And that's going to school. It's going to culinary school. It's going to baking school, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, funny enough, I didn't go to culinary school either, but I did do a lot of school. I actually have a degree in biochemistry.
How's that working out?
Yeah. Yeah, I went to the University of Florida, and I got a degree in biochemistry, and I actually went to medical school, and I did my first year of medical school, and the whole year, like probably halfway through, I just started thinking, like, I don't know if this is what I want to do anymore, like, you know, for my whole life. Like, and I love my family. I love the family business. I always have. And I just was thinking more and more, like, I think I want to go into the family business. And I ended up committing to it. So I did 1 year of medical school. And actually, if I was still there, I would be a doctor right now. But all my friends are graduating.
You know, the chemistry part kind of lays over the baking thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
How's your mother? Is she out of therapy yet? You know, my son, the doctor?
Well, oh, no, that's my grandma. My grandma always, she still says, oh, my grandson, Antonio, the doctor. And I'm like, Grandma, I only did 1 year, so I can't help everyone. Right, I can try. I can refer you to my friends.
You know, my daughter was the same way. My daughter has like two master's degrees in clinical psychology, right? And then a year after school, after 9 years of private college, she goes, I think I want to come back into the restaurant business with you. I'm like, God, you got a lot of your mother in you, you know, kidding around, you know? It's like, it's not like I wouldn't have given you the money. It's just 9 years here, you know?
Yeah, I'm still paying off that first year of medical school.
I bet.
So I assimilate this career choice like to music. Like, you know, I see a drummer packing up after a gig. It's like pretty involved. I said, don't you wish you went into playing harmonica?
Yeah.
But, you know, over the years here, we've interviewed Gus from Embassy Diner, people from the bagel, bread industry.
Sure.
And, I mean, it's not banker's hours. It's not 9 to 5. So, it must be incredible hours involved in accomplishing what you do at your bakery.
Well, that's kind of funny, though, is that I'm usually not the person who wakes up early. Like, we have a bunch of people. I mean, we have pretty much a 24/7 operation.
Sure, yeah.
And there's, like, almost always someone in the shop working. But, you know, the bread baker, he comes in, you know, around midnight, give or take an hour. He starts making the bread and everything. I have, like, the guy who comes in and makes danishes and the donuts and stuff like that. Someone who bakes it all off and finishes it and does some other stuff, cheesecakes and all that. Those are the guys that are there, like, you know, they come in at night and they work. They leave, like, early in the morning.
Sure.
But I actually usually get in a little later because I'm not just a baker. Like, I'm the manager. I have to, you know, make sure everything runs smooth all day. So I'm there usually now until closing. So, I mean, my hours are all over the place. What time I come in is kind of a gamble, but pretty much I'm always there at least an hour after closing. So
that's a good segue also. Just give us the address of where your bake shop is and the hours and...
Yeah, 59 Route 111 in Smithtown. We're open at 7 a.m. Monday through Saturday. We close at 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday. We close at 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. And we close at 8 p.m. on Sunday.
And what would the website be?
AlpinePastryShop.com.
And all your different social media handles.
Alpine Pastry Shop, yeah. Alpine Pastry Shop. No other name. There's other places in Georgia or whatever. No affiliation.
So let me ask you, the variety of things that are made in your bake shop. I mean, you must have breads and rolls and cookies and celebratory cakes. Is there other items that I'm missing or...
Well, we have, everything. All of that stuff that you listed. I mean, we do crazy custom cake orders, you know, fondant, you know, tiered cakes, you know, shaped cakes, you know, anything that you want, like our decorators can do. And not to mention our cakes are actually good. You know, it's a cake that you actually want to eat.
They look good and they taste good.
It's not just for eat. Some people have told me they went to some very famous places where, you know, the cakes... They come out amazing, but what's inside is not so great.
Yeah, no, I've been a victim of that myself. Yeah.
But, I mean, other than cakes, like, we specialize, of course, in pastries, you know, all traditional stuff, some new stuff, like the Rainbow Donuts.
Or,
you know, and we do bread and rolls,
everything. So obviously cookies. You have like Italian breads, and so do you get involved in challah, you know, challahs and stuff?
Oh yeah, challahs. We make a ton of challahs. Every week we make challahs, and then for the Jewish holidays, like we'll make the like the round ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're doing with the raisins. We do all different kinds. I make them for some of the diners, so they use them for their French toast.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I have a question about bread. You know, I've dabbled in bread making. It's not really my thing, but the bottom line is I never understood how you get a starter and you get the guy in there at 2 in the morning and he does this and you steam injected ovens and you're done and you got to put down and you're shaping it, you're baking it, you finally get there and say, how much is that? It's $1.89. I mean, how do you make any money with that? It's nuts.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, the bread prices have gone up over the years.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, a dollar for Italian bread anymore. But it is a lot of work, but it's something that, you know, they can do in bulk.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, like, the bread will be made and immediately frozen. And, you know, we have, like, an industrial freezer that freezes it, you know, really cold. So that way, when you take it out the next day, it's, like, brand new. And you just let it sit in the fridge, and then it proofs up beautiful. So it's a lot of work. I mean, I'm not a bread baker. Like, I've only done very little bit of it.
You
know, I played around with the sourdough and everything, which, you know, the sourdough is like the starter is, you know, the whole heart of it. When people were requesting the sourdough for a while, and we always were like, I don't know. And the last couple of years, we started making it, and it took a while to get it, like, going properly. But now our sourdough is like phenomenal.
I know a guy who's had a starter for it was handed down to him that was started in the 1800s.
I've heard of that.
It's crazy.
It's just a little bit, you know, a little bit left of it.
Explain to people what a starter is. Most people probably don't know what it is.
Well, the starter is just, you know, it's the yeast, and you feed it, you know, the flour, and you just keep feeding it you know, every day or so, and it keeps it cultured and alive.
Right,
and it gives it that, like, especially for the sourdough, like, it gives you that, like, proper fermentation, that kind of
tartness.
You know,
also,
it gets you the tartness. It gets you, you know, that end product that you're looking for. That's like the really important thing, because otherwise it's a little bland. You know, it's
for
not, it doesn't come out the same
way. No, it's white bread.
Exactly.
It's, go ahead.
So we're here with Antonio Cuccia from Alpine Pastry Shop in Smithtown. And I have a couple other questions. I mean, I walk into a bake shop and there's an incredible inventory. I mean, cookies, you know, the cookies you buy by the pound in a box that you, you know, bring to your friend's house for Saturday night or whatever. So what's the shelf life of what you guys have? You know, it seems like whenever you're there, there's stuff in the showcase, and they're always replenishing. But, like, what type of shelf life do you have on your
product? You got like secrets out here.
No. That's a great question. Honestly, it really depends on the product, right? If we're talking butter cookies, like, they have a really long shelf life. But, you know, we're going through so much volume that it doesn't really matter. But for certain things like pastries, right? Like, you have to keep the pastry case full. It has to look nice.
Sure.
So there's a huge turnover on pastries. You know, some weeks we make a bunch and we make more and we make more. And some weeks, you know, it doesn't really sell. And what do? We throw it away.
It's
terrible. It always broke my heart, you know, like a whole tray of Napoleons, a whole tray of eclairs, you know, just straight into the garbage.
Make bread pudding.
And it's, you know, it's really sad. But actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because over the last couple of years, we started using a service called Too Good To Go. And it's been phenomenal, because we pack up at the end of the night a bunch of stuff that we don't want to sell the next day.
Right.
Not, it's not bad.
Of course, yeah.
But it's just not as fresh as we want it to be.
Yeah.
And it's at a discount. I think they pay like 30% of what the actual cost is of the item. And, you know, it's a surprise. So people come in and they just grab the bag and go. And it's all done through an app.
Very cool.
Yeah. So it's really nice, because you get a lot of people to try your place that maybe never heard of it. They just found it through the app. And you're not having so much food waste. And you recover a little bit of, loss.
Sure, yeah.
Because, you know, it definitely hurts to throw away a ton of pastries.
Yeah, amen.
But, you know, if you're getting, 30 cents to the dollar on, whatever it is, it helps a little bit to just, you know.
And what's the name of that app?
Too Good To Go. Yeah. Apparently it started over in Europe and came over here a few years ago. And I know it's big with pizzerias, bagel shops. We put on a ton of danishes and donuts and bread. I have a separate bag just for bread because I don't want people to get upset when they come pick up a bag and it's $30 worth of bread. So I made a separate item for that.
So you just piqued my interest. You mentioned Danish. A pet peeve I have, and maybe I'm out of school here, but when you get a cheese Danish, some people just put a layer of cheese on top. It's almost like cheesecake, but on top. And then other bakers, it's throughout the whole Danish.
Yeah. So the way that we do it is it's the baker's cheese is folded up almost in an envelope. And then it's finished off that way. So it's throughout the whole Danish. It's not just the braided Danish with a plop of cheese on top. Some places do that, and that's fine if that's the style that you want.
Yeah.
But our cheese Danish are phenomenal. They're that's one of my favorites. If it's hot in the morning, I wait for it to cool down a little bit, and then I'm going for the cheese Danish.
Now, do you put a shaved almond on?
We put shaved almonds on top. We also do one with crumb because people just love crumbs.
Would be my favorite.
Yeah, the crumb is really good. The guy who makes the crumb at our shop, he's got a really good crumb.
Yeah, there's nothing like crumb cake,
Yeah.
So I got to ask you also, in today's world, everything's fast food and the like. So here you have a family-run bakery that just breathes freshness and delightfulness. It can go on and on with adjectives. But what's your opinion of supermarket bakeries and Panera-type, establishments? And then also going into how long the shelf life is on things. I had some Martin hot dog rolls on my counter for 6 months.
Yeah.
And they never went green.
Read the ingredients.
And then at the same time, I'll get something and, before I know it, it's spoiled. And then to go to the extreme, I have a friend, Joe. We call him Dunkin' Joe. He has 26 Dunkin' Donuts. And he's always quick to offer his friends to come in and get stuff at the end of the day because he says, the Munchkins, they're like hockey pucks the next day.
Yeah, what are you going to do with it?
So, we talked about that your stuff can last a couple of days in the showcase, and then you have, this fast food stuff that's, uneatable the next day. But, again, what's the big deal in your mind about a supermarket that's catering to the general public compared to, somebody that goes into a bakery, the aroma. And we talk about this also. You go into a deli in the old days, the guy would slice a bologna and go, here, kid.
Yeah, there you
go. You walk into a bakery, and how cool is it when somebody at the staff, offers you a cookie or whatever. But give us some insight into all that.
What you're talking about is the difference between artisans and commerciality, or whatever that word would be, there's two schools of thought on it. There's one, let's make a whole lot of money and sell this stuff as cheaply as we can and make enough money. And then you got guys like Alpine who have people in there. I mean, just making a bread to me is impressive. I can't tell you how many bakeries I've been in. I know the products out there, right? Like Tomcat Bakery and Featherstone, all that. And I'll see the breads, they're in a bag, when you get there early in the morning, in a bag in the front of the door, you know that they're coming from some other bakery. They're not baking it there. But the fact that, he's baking it in a place is a reason to go there. I mean, you want to support
and
artisans.
And you talk about that, then I get to the thought of the pastry box and tying the red and white string around it so you can carry it out and stuff. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's a skill in itself.
But, we talk about at least I talk about, in Italian cuisine, there's 100 different shapes and varieties of pasta.
Right.
And bread also. You can get a loaf. You can get a round piece of Italian bread. It goes on and on. I mean, how do you figure out how to pair food with these different things?
Well, it depends on what use it is going to be. I mean, if you're going to make a sandwich, you don't want a thin little for sale. You know what I mean? You need something with some heft so you kind of, you know, grooming it around what you're going to make.
Oh, and then even, you know, I talk about the supermarket. You go in, you got to get a bag of rolls. Well, I don't want a bag of rolls. If I want, you know, six different rolls or whatever. I mean, it's the beauty of, again, going into a pastry shop like Alpine.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, because we make everything there, we have the ability to customize stuff and do special requests. So even like you were saying, making a sandwich, very often people will ask us for, you know, a 5 foot, 6 foot, you know, hero.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we can make them because we have a big shelf oven that we can make like a 6 foot sub, no problem.
Yeah,
so,
cool.
You know, it's funny because every time I bring one of those out, everyone's like, oh my gosh, what is that?
Submarine.
Yeah, yeah. So it's always kind of fun getting it into the person's car. But I mean, that's the thing too, is that, you know, some items have long shelf life. If we're sure. talking about like cutout cookies or whatever, like, I mean, if you
anything with almond paste.
Yeah, well, especially if it's going to be refrigerated, stuff like that.
Sure.
But like the bread, you know, the bread gets thrown out every night.
Yeah,
I mean, whatever we can't get rid of, like it gets thrown out every night.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you talk about the rolls sitting out on the counter for, you know, a couple months, like that's not going to happen with our stuff. I've had people who call me up and they're like, I just bought this sourdough like 3 days ago and it's got mold on it. And it's like, well, it's a fresh bread. It's sourdough. And that's kind of just what happens after 3 days. You can freeze it. So usually I tell people, you know, you're only going to eat half of it in the next couple of days, just take the other half and put it in the freezer.
Sure.
And when it comes out, it's like perfect.
Perfect.
It's the same. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there's some stuff that you can do to kind of get the most life out of the product. But the difference is, you know, when you go to a supermarket, like a lot of that stuff is being made wholesale, just all machine work,
totally.
Very minimal,
totally.
You know, hands on.
Yeah,
and, you know, at Alpine, like we're putting everything into it, you know. We're there all the time. I work like crazy hours,
yeah, yeah.
So you know we really put a lot of love into it.
So also, my thought goes to I'll call it a topping, but you can have a buttercream cake, and I don't know what the other you consider the other icings are, and then you know, you can have a fresh fruit strawberry shortcake with whipped cream or whatever. I guess, is it whipped cream as compared to buttercream, or what are the different toppings on a cake?
Yeah, well, it could be whatever you want. I mean, we do whipped cream, we do buttercream, we do fudge, you can do ganache, you can do anything.
Fondant?
Fondant.
Here you go. What's the definition of ganache?
Well, the definition, I don't know. I mean, we make our ganache a certain way.
Oh, I mean, is it like a chocolate pudding? What?
No, it's not a pudding.
Coating.
It's
like,
yeah. It's very rich.
So listen, before we get into ganache, because now you just triggered something in me, let's take a little break. We got to, you know, pay some bills here.
All right, something tells me I'm going to get yelled at.
No, we're going to come back for my favorite part. We got to taste some of this stuff. Antonio put a whole bunch of stuff here, and I'm dying to get into it. You know, I need a little sugar blast.
And again, we're here with Antonio Cuccia from Alpine Pastry Shop in Smithtown.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al.
Introducing Smoking Al's new fantasy platters. The whole gang can have fun feasting on each one of these enormous oversized platters, whether at home or in the dining room. Try the new Macho Nacho, the Bow Wow Wow, the Poo Poo Platter, the Caesar Pleaser, barbecue egg rolls, chicken wings, and a whole lot more. Smoking Al's Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
So my mouth is a little full here, but welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM with your host, Tom Shordell, chef, author, restaurateur.
And sugar addict. I'm looking at this like embarrassment of riches here that we have. It's like, Yikes. Why don't you, I know it's hard over the radio because people can't see, but explain some of these things that you have here, Antonio. They look great.
I mean, I brought an assortment. So I got like, you know, the morning stuff that's like donuts, Danishes. Yeah. I got some cronuts in there as well. Cronuts, you know, with those, the fried croissants. And then, of course, we brought the rainbow cookie donuts. That's what everyone's been asking for. So yeah. I said I can't go there without them. And then we've got a box of cookies, you know.
The pinoli cookies.
Yeah, pinoli
great.
Cookies. Yeah. Oh, those are one of my favorites. Oh.
So what did you say? Cronuts?
Cronuts, yeah. You never heard of a cronut?
Well, there was something with that a couple of years ago, and again, you perfected it.
As the chef in the
no,
city.
No, you know what? Yeah, it was really big. It blew up in the city, but it was something that we were doing for years. We just weren't shaping it into a donut. So, right, you know, we're coming back to the whole everyone loves donuts.
Sure. Oh, yeah,
everyone loves the donut shape. There's something about it that's just very, I don't know, very receivable. So... Yeah, I mean, it's a fried croissant, basically, with the, you know, we do it all different ways with cannoli cream inside or, you know, jelly, Boston cream, you know, all the traditional
ways. Just because there wasn't enough calories, you decided to throw it in the deep fryer.
And they're big, too, so I usually cut them in half or in quarters.
So the bakery industry has gone through a lot of evolution. You had on, I guess, Sex and the City was a Magnolia Bakery, so got a lot of notoriety. Mm-hmm. You have The Cake Boss was a TV show.
Yeah, buddy.
And then what are those little donuts? Something by, I don't know.
You're losing me.
I don't know. When you go into the train, into Grand Central and you go to the airports, it's these little donuts or
mini,
whatever.
Mini donuts?
Yeah. But again, it's like a whole chic thing. And again, you've taken the best of everything and put it together. Kudos to you and your family.
Thank you.
Yeah,
keep
talking. I'm going to just explore over here for a minute. Hang on.
I like that. Yeah. So now, in today's world, how is donuts a big thing? Or?
Yeah, donuts, I think people just always come back to donuts. It's just a very... iconic dessert. So, you know, we make our donuts and we make them like a little bigger than you might find that, you know, like a Dunkin' Donuts or something like that. So, you know, a lot of people come in because we're making them fresh and they love the way that we do them, you know, for whatever reasons. They prefer ours over the other ones. You know, maybe they like the jelly. They like how much of the filling we put in there. So there's a big demand for donuts.
So I have to ask you a price point. I mean, as I approach Centurion at my age, I know that growing up, I believe a bagel or a roll was like 25 cents. And I don't know what your price point is today. I'm sure it's competitive. But when I go into a supermarket, usually, at least in the Farmingdale area, there is not a lot of bakeries like bake shops like yourself. That's the one thing Farmingdale doesn't have. We have bars, we have all sorts of restaurants, but there really isn't a family-run bakery.
Well, Farmingdale has defined its priorities, apparently.
I guess. But I walk into the supermarket, and again, usually you have to buy, you know, a dozen rolls or whatever. But I find $2.25 for a roll at a supermarket ridiculous.
You're still bitter about this.
So I guess I know I'm showing my age, but...
And you go to the movies, you're looking for like 25 cents to get into the movie, or what?
I believe, if my recollection is correct, I used to get dropped off at the movies as a kid, and I believe a dollar got me some sort of food from the concession and entry into the...
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then, of course, when I was a little older and I needed to get into the R-rated movies, we'd hang out outside waiting for some unsuspecting soul to accompany us in.
Yeah, Matt Helm movies, whatever. Anyway, I have this incredible thing here that I've been chewing on. It's got my two favorite things in the world. It's got a crumb topping and it's got a chocolate inside. Explain this. This is incredible.
It's a Danish, yeah. That's a Danish with just chocolate and crumb. I mean, we do them all different ways. So that one's big. One of our big sellers is we do a coffee cake that's Danish, like a Danish ring.
Right.
And we do it with the pecans, and people go crazy for that one. So, you know, every day, you know, during the week, like we make a dozen of those, and on the weekend, you know, maybe 20. But people love those. Even something that I do that is not on the menu, but, you know, if you listen to this, I guess you can ask for it, is that we'll cut it open. We'll cut it in half and fill it with maybe like a lobster cream or like a whipped cream, you know, whatever you like. You know, the lobster cream from the lobster tail pastries. No lobsters were harmed. You know, that's something really good.
Yeah.
That's really, really good.
Yeah. The choices here are just insane. You know, I'm looking at everything and I'm you're going to have this amazing effect on my health because I'm going to be freaking out by the time I leave here with all
the
sugar.
So now, are there any seasonal pastries and cakes?
There are endless seasonal items. I mean, with every season, there's, you know, a ton of things that we have to change out. So right now, you know, we're getting into, we got to start making key lime pies again. We got to start making the open blueberry pies, open peach pies. We're making like lemon blueberry cakes. But, you know, whenever there's a holiday, usually there's some kind of dessert that goes along with it.
Yeah.
You know, like we just passed, you know, St. Patty's Day and St. Joseph's Day. So that around that time, there's a ton of items like the San Giuseppe pastries.
Sure.
And, you know, all the different Irish desserts that we do, the Irish soda bread. So it's always changing.
So you just went through the array of different pies. So obviously tops of pies can be all different. There's lattice, there's crumb, there's solid with holes, I guess, to let the steam out or something.
Yeah.
But do you do all of those or do you specialize in one type?
Yeah, we do all of them. So, I mean, the lattice we usually don't do too much of. If somebody like requests it, we can do it. But, I mean, to be honest, it takes a lot of time.
It's a pain, yes.
Yeah, it's a pain. Yeah. So, and I don't think that you get a better result. I think it just looks prettier. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you're looking for, I mean, people like the pie crust. I love our pie crust. So I would rather it be covering the whole top of it. I don't want like a little lattice that gets burnt or something like that.
And do you use some graham cracker?
Yeah. On the key lime pie, mm-hmm. we do graham cracker bottom.
Sure.
And it is so good. It is buttery. It's so,
butter and sugar, you know?
Yeah, butter and sugar.
And do you do, I guess some people do like a sweet potato pie, I mean, or is that a different
category? The southern thing.
No, you know, we don't do the sweet potato pie anymore. We used to do it for Thanksgiving, and, you know, we sell like two.
Yeah,
or one. And it's not worth it. So we don't do them anymore.
That's because everybody's concentrating on Tom's favorite, the marshmallow over the sweet potatoes
the
string bean casserole.
Yeah, that's easy to make at home. But we do, for like Thanksgiving, we do like the pecan pies. Those are phenomenal. And then, you know, we do all like the grain pies mm-hmm. going into Christmas and Easter. Those are like huge.
There used to be a place in Copeg that I used to go to every once in a while. And every once in a while I get invited to somebody's house and I generally don't go because I'm working or whatever. But when I did, there was this German bakery and they're not there anymore. And they used to make this round, it was like a crumb cake with, they had cherry or blueberry in it. And it was very thin. And it was one of the best things I ever ate. It was just really incredibly good. And I can't find it anywhere.
I got to say,
we make something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
We just call them crumb pies.
Yeah, yeah.
And we do them apple, blueberry, and cherry, typically.
There you go. Yeah.
And the dough that is on the bottom of it, funny enough, we actually just call it bottom dough. Uh-huh. And
I won't jagonize over the name.
Yeah. And it's different. It's more like a cake, uh-huh. like the kind right. of dough. It's a little cakey. It's not like flaky, right. Like pie dough. And then it's just covered in the crumbs, which, you know, our crumbs are so good. So that's actually one of my favorites, too. If I'm going for a pie, sometimes that's the one. I'll go for an apple pie.
I got to say, the raspberry jelly or jam is the real deal. I got raspberry pits in my teeth.
I know. I get the same thing over here. I'm eating this Linzer cookie, and I'm like, yeah.
So let me ask you, my mind goes to fondant. All of a sudden, fondant got very popular in the day.
I think you're the only person that happens to.
I don't know. But I just remember, you know, everybody was trying to do their own things with these fancy cakes and the toppings. And I just remember one of Carrie's friends probably weighed 120 pounds and she's laying on the counter rolling out the fondant. Fondant is just a very sugary finish for our cake?
Fondant is a colossal pain in the ass for anybody who's cutting the cake. I'm going to tell everybody out there, please, if you have an occasion cake and you come into one of my restaurants, don't do fondant. It's just a mess.
And you must do wedding cakes and stuff like that, or, you know, multi-tiered cakes and stuff.
Yeah, of course. We've done probably a million wedding cakes by now.
Sure.
I mean, we do them all traditional styles. You know, right now it's very simple. It's actually the
naked cakes.
Naked cakes. Very, very simple designs of what a lot of people are going for, and then they'll just add fresh flowers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So that's huge. The fondant, actually, I would say it was more popular a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and now it's like drifting a little further away. Fondant typically is more expensive because it does involve a lot of work. Not only do you have to smear the cake first, but then you have to lay over the fondant.
Yeah.
It's got to be smooth. It's got to look nice. It's got to have the edges.
Sure.
And it, you know, has to have that really clean look. Otherwise, it looks like a mess.
So it's my memory goes to at one point, like you said, a couple of years ago, maybe because of Cake Boss and stuff like that, everybody's was into rolling out fondant and doing their own thing. So Carrie had a girlfriend that lived down in Florida, and she came up and she goes, I'm going to make your cake for your 50th birthday. I think it was 40th birthday, actually.
Boy.
And so to make things easier, I got a couple of sheet cakes or whatever just so she didn't have to do the baking. But we brought it up to the catering hall, and she was going to assemble the cake there. It was multi-levels. It was going to have all sorts of ornaments on it. So they give us a room, a prep room to work in. And we said, well, we're going to need a cart to roll the cake out afterwards, and they come with the cart, and it doesn't fit in the door. So there they are, like tilting it, you know, everything they can to get it in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But I was laughing because, like, what goes in has to come out.
Listen, I've had cakes go down, man. You know, I mean, I've been catering for 50 years, you know. Every once in a while, one of them bites the dust. It's like a nightmare.
But this cake, somehow we resolved the problem. But, I mean, I'm done, Tom.
No, try this, please.
Oh, I'm sure it's good.
Well, that's the cheese Danish.
Here you said it was
talking about.
That's the one with the crumbs.
The cheese Danish, the crumbs. Yeah. Oh, I've gone to heaven.
It's up there with sex and pizza, you know.
You might have a new ending today.
I might have a new ending, yeah.
But oh, my goodness. In the day with these fancy fondant cakes, they were putting lights on them. You know, there was battery packs
all
sorts of ornaments and whatever. But again, we're sitting here with Antonio Cuccia from Alpine Pastry Shop in Smithtown. And we're having a fun, delicious
I'm in the throes of a sugar rush at the moment. So, yeah, it's fabulous. The cheese Danish is stupid good.
Oh, my question earlier in the show is stupid because I asked if there's cheese throughout the Danish.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's a bunch of it there.
Yeah, no, and ours, we put it throughout the whole Danish. Like I said, it's folded up like an envelope.
Yeah.
So it really has it from, you know, corner
top
to corner.
Yeah,
top to bottom. It's not just a little plop on top of the bread.
And it's drizzled with an icing. It almost has like a lemony taste to it.
That's probably coming from the
cheese.
Yeah, from the baker's cheese. Yeah, there's a little bit of
this
and that in there.
How does that differ from the cheesecake?
Well, the baker's cheese is kind of like its own item. And then so you buy the baker's cheese and you touch it up with, you know, whatever you need to make it like for your purposes. Whereas like a cheesecake, if you're doing New York style, that's cream cheese. We also do like an Italian cheesecake that's made with ricotta. And, you know, there's a bunch of different ways to do it. But it's called the baker's cheese, for inside those Danish.
And all your supplies, like I know that someone like, I'm talking with my mouth full here.
You get cheese on
you. You know,
nose.
When Tom's in a restaurant, he's got purveyors sometimes delivering, you know, the meats and the vegetables or whatever. Sometimes he would go to the marketplace. In the world of bakery, is everything like, you know, just delivered because you're basically using sugar and flour and the baker's cheese and things like that?
Yeah, so we're not typically hand-picking items, right? It's not like I go to the store and I'm picking out the vegetables and the cuts of meat that I want. But, you know, we have these huge distributors that, you know, they have all the items. And you got to go to the different ones to find the items that you like and that work for you. You know, just because an item is cheaper doesn't mean that it's going to work the same. You have to, you know, choose the brands and the, you know, the types of flour and the types of sugar. You know, we have like all these things picked out. And, you know, we just get it delivered, dropped off in these huge trucks.
There's a balance between art and economics. I mean, you know,
Somebody comes in and orders a strawberry shortcake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is strawberry something you normally have? Or if you make banana cream pie, I assume it's not a mix. You're using fresh bananas.
It's hard to make it
without
bananas.
Yeah. So, well, we get the fruit, like we'll go to the store and like we'll pick up big orders of fruit like every week. So that is huge too, because, you know, sometimes the fruit doesn't come in the way that you want. Sometimes it's
Amen.
Like bad the next day, or yeah. you pick it up and you realize, oh my gosh, half of the container is, you know, garbage.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a hassle, especially whenever you're working with anything like fresh fruit.
Fresh fruit's a nightmare.
So I come from a manufacturing background, but when you look in a bakery, I assume there's got to be some like machine that's mixing, you got to have ovens, and I don't know what other equipment.
Yeah, I mean, we have heavy machinery. We got those big Hobart mixers. We've got giant ovens.
The sheeters.
The sheeters. I have dough breakers and spiral mixers.
Hobart's still a name in that industry? Because I, for whatever reason, I think everybody
it's
knows.
Hobart's still around.
Yeah, well, our Hobart has been around. Our Hobart, the machines in the shop are way, way older than I am.
Yeah,
they are you know, some of them are 50, 60 years old, 70 years old.
That's when they made them to last. You know?
Yeah, those machines are like unbreakable. Yeah.
So I have to interrupt. I'm very selfish, so I'm going to invite Antonio back for part two. Maybe he'll bring some more pastries.
I'm going to be on.
This is a sugar overload.
I know. I'm going to be singing a Jardians commercial on my way back home. Well, listen, we have to think about getting out of here. So why don't you give us the whole rundown about where we find you and, you know, where you're located again, phone numbers, all that stuff.
Yeah, Alpine Pastry Shop in Smithtown, 59 Route 111. And you can find us at alpinepastryshop.com, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, and Alpine Pastry Shop. And, 631-265-5610. Just give us a call. We ship. We do everything. Yeah, so,
Well, the stuff is incredible. I mean, everything I've had here is just, and I'm pretty picky about, you know, food. Great job. Thank you for coming. It's been a pleasure.
And I can't wait to hear your going out verbiage today.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to close this. Close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which may or may not be the same as the last couple of weeks. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it's your last. Keep chocolate in your life as important as sex, pizza, and this cheese Danish I have in front of me, which is completely ridiculous.
Oh, boy.
All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Antonio.
All right. Thank you.